This station is not responsible for the problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to be here talking about cars. If you'd like to join Eric and Brian, you can. There's three lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let's start off with something important, Larry Harker's Auto Repair. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you in part by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Bob is a really good diagnostician. He's really good technicians. And the young men underneath Bob are being taught by a real master. So if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, he does oil changes all the way up to the sophisticated diagnosis. But if you've got one of those cars or trucks that you've been around the block and you've stopped at a lot of places and you've said these words, nobody can fix this problem or nobody can fix my car or truck, then you're wrong. Because Bob at Larry Harker's sure as heck can. 38th Avenue and Indian School, you'll meet Ellen. She's at the front counter and Bob is in the shop. So real quick, let me tell you, I'm going to take Eric. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take Eric. He's been waiting. Eric, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I got a question. I've got an AC problem on my daughter's 2008 Honda Civic. And I think more than anything, I'd like to make sure I understand what it's doing before I go and try to get some repair done. Okay. But essentially, what she's got there is, I know there's one problem, and that is that the clutch is always engaged on the compressor, whether the AC's on or not. And I first noticed this when it was idling, she had the AC off, and it blew the pressure out, the pressure relief valve. And so what I'm assuming is in that particular case, with the AC off and the clutch engaged, the condenser fan wasn't running, and it probably just built up pressure, and then that popped the pressure relief valve. And then she turned on the AC. Condenser fan came on, but then shortly after, the pressure relief valve also popped. And what I'm assuming is that at some point it tried to disengage the clutch, but the clutch stayed engaged and built up pressure. And what I'm wondering is, am I understanding there correctly? And could there be something else in the system other than that clutch always being engaged that might be problematic?
Well, yeah, the easy thing is just disconnect the harness from the back of the compressor or the clutch area of the compressor. And so just get down underneath there and, you know, pop that connector off. And if you have an electrical malfunction upstream that's keeping the compressor on, then you'll know that replace the compressor is not the key. On the other hand, if the compressor continues to run after you've yanked the power and the ground on it, then you're going to have to replace the compressor. The rest of the questions they're not important at this point. You've got a compressor problem. So you put the compressor problem, you add exactly to the ounces the refrigerant that it takes, then you go ahead and leave your gauges on there, you let it sit there and run. You hope the AC fan controls come on, and that fan may be triggered by the air conditioning, so it's on 100% of the time, or it can be triggered by a low-pressure switch or a high-pressure switch. So if it gets too low, it comes on or turns off the compressor. Actually, the low-pressure switch will turn off the compressor, and the high-pressure switch will turn off the fan and sometimes the compressor in the event that the pressures are too high. So I can't tell you what's popping Freon out of it, but I can tell you that's the process I would take to fix it. Let's just get disconnected and see what happens. It's entirely possible that you've just got a bad clutch, or the face of the clutch has welded itself to the pulley, the drive pulley, and that's the reason why it's there.
Yeah, I think that's the case, that latter, because what I did is I removed the serpentine belt and got down there and just rotated the pulley, and the clutch turns with it, even with, you know, the car off and everything. So I think that the clutch is just welded to the...
Yeah, because the belt drives the pulley, compressor. But the clutch hub is outside of that pulley, and we fire it up electronically, and there's a big magnet that's in the pulley, the backside of the pulley. So when we magnetize the spinning belt-driven pulley, when we magnetize that, then it sucks the clutch face forward. So if you're going to do a compressor, read the directions exactly how to transfer oil, because there's a variety of ways, but you can't just put 3 ounces of oil in a new compressor because it may come with 3 ounces. So sometimes they want you to dump the old oil out and measure it and then add that back to the new one, or some mathematical equation of that. So just make sure you read the directions, because us guys typically don't.
Yeah. Can I ask you, because I consider myself, I guess, a fairly competent shade tree mechanic, and I can replace a compressor. Can I take that car to a shop and they'll, evac out the refrigerant, and then I can do the work and then bring it back to them, and they'll, evac and recharge for me? Will that save me a little bit of money, or is that not worth the hassle?
No. I'm glad you opened that door, because that is absolutely the best thing. But what you need to do is make sure that they understand. You need to make sure that underneath that car somewhere is a sticker and it says how much Freon it has. So, it's say 23.5 ounces. We have sophisticated pieces of equipment where we can evacuate it. Then evacuation is pulling all the air and the moisture out of it. Then you let it sit for 20, 30 minutes to make sure it doesn't leak down, because that would be an indicator that you messed up the attachments to the compressor, or we have a leak somewhere else. But if it holds pressure, then they put 23.5 ounces in that thing, and that thing will run as good as it ever could have. So you can't do that in your driveway, because most people don't look at the cans and they think they're 1 pound cans, which is a 16 ounce can, and nothing could be further from the truth. Many of them are 10 or 12 ounce cans. So nobody really knows, and you can't measure out those kinds of ounces. So I would applaud that direction, and you can call around and say, how much to evacuate and recharge my system? And they're going to quote two prices, the evacuate and recharge and the refrigerant. And then they're going to tell you, we're not going to cover the warranty, we're not going to be in the food chain on this because you did it. And then you can look them in the eye and say, I followed the directions completely with respect to the oil and the compressor, and that should put them at ease. But that's how I would handle it. Okay?
And extract the refrigerant that's currently in there, because I can't crack the system. But they'll do that for me?
No.
Let me go replace the compressor and then come back and...
No, you can't take it to them. You can't replace the compressor and then turn around and take it to them and expect it there to be. In order to replace the compressor, you have to take it off of the system. So you're going to lose all the refrigerant. Boy, I'm having a tough time today. You're going to lose all the refrigerant. Now, if you have a shop and you want to say to them, hey, can I bring it in first? Let's suck it out, and you just give me credit for this. Now, if it was my shop, I would say to you, I'm going to give you credit, but you're giving me contaminated refrigerant. I got to take the oil and the metal out of it. I've got to make it new again. So instead of, and I'm just throwing stupid numbers at you here, instead of $1 an ounce, I'm only going to give you 50 cents an ounce credit. And you go, okay. Because you're not giving him what he's giving you back, which is virgin Freon.
Sure.
So, but that's what I would do. Do you have a shop that you can deal with?
I don't. Do you have one you can recommend? I'm out in the Chandler-Gilbert area.
I do have shops all over this valley that I recommend. This puts me in an embarrassing situation because I don't have anybody in the Chandler-Gilbert area. I have one shop up on the 202 and the 101 in Tempe, and then I'm near Warner and I-10. So if you wanted to, what I described to you is a process that we use, and so if you wanted to do that, but you can also just let the refrigerator fly and do that, but it's two trips to the shop. Let's suck it out, and then you go do the compressor and bring it back. So I know our staff wouldn't have any problem with that. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Eric. And Brian, you're up. Oh, by the way, the name of the shop, in case you want it, it's at Warner and I-10, is Salem Boys. Salem is my last name, and Boys is a representative of all the guys that I grew up with. Brian, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, I've got a cousin that was telling me the other day he's got an 02 Corolla, 132,000 miles on it present. presently. And it's got a 1.8 four-cylinder engine. He was using a synthetic blend oil for, I'm not sure how long, it was 20,000, quite some time.
Okay.
And he was talked into putting in the straight synthetic or pure synthetic oil in it, which he did. And he got to his next 5,000 changes every 5,000. And he got to his next 5,000-mile change, and they said, sir, you're a quart down on oil. And I said, well, do you see blue smoke? Do you see leaks on the ground? He said, no, I checked for both of that. He swears up and down, neither one. So I told him it probably did not fully fill the oil when he did his last oil change, synthetic. And that's the only thing I could think of, and that's the reason I'm calling you.
Okay.
Is if you'd have any other idea of why he might be down a quart of oil at 5,000 with synthetic oil.
Okay. What is? I mean, how do you know that you're one quart down? Tell me how you would know.
He told me that the shop that he took it to when he went to do his oil change, they checked the oil before they dropped the plug. And he was a quart down on oil when he came in.
I understand that. I understand that. My point is, mm-hmm. you can ask 20 people what a quart low is, and you're going to get 20 different answers.
So I see.
And that's my point. What he should have done is, let me see. Now, I can't tell mm-hmm. you how many times I've been involved in some stupid dispute on behalf of some arbitration, like the Better Business Bureau and other places, where we talk about this. The AdMark is a quart. The AdMark is a quart on everything. The AdMark's a quart. But I've seen people pull sticks and the oil's between the full and the AdMark and they go, oh, I better add a quart. I've seen that. I've heard people. I've heard men, women, kids. I mean, I remember an auto mechanics teacher I had who said, once it comes off the full mark, you have to add oil. Well, there's nothing. That's not truthful. That's just not truthful.
Right.
So the question would be is, where was it? Now, no blue smoke, wasn't any. I don't think it has anything to do with the oil. I think the guy had to add exactly and have, because that thing could probably have 3.5 quarts or 4.1 quarts. It's probably going to be some weird number. So he brings it to the full mark. He starts it up, runs it, brings it to the full mark. And when it sits on the full mark, he goes 5,000 miles. Now, I wouldn't add oil till it gets at the add line or below. And I think that's the test that needs to be done. He's scared that he got the wrong oil. He's scared that he made the change and his motor doesn't love him anymore. He's scared that he may have caused damage. None of that happened. None of that.
Right.
So that's
And I assured him of that, too, because, you know, I if I'd add oil, I'd do it exactly the way that you said. But he ran scared enough that he went back to the synthetic blend for the synthetic, and I said, well, that wasn't necessary, I told him.
Well, I think that's the last issue. Synthetic, he's wasting his money buying synthetic and changing it at 5,000 miles. That's a crazy notion. That oil's 8 to 10,000 miles. So if he goes back to a blend, then the blend is 5 to 7,500. So if he's going to do a 5,000K oil change and filter, then that's fine. But if he goes back to the blend, it's okay. You know, it's hard for me to counsel somebody who lives in Milwaukee because they want me to fix their car through their eyes. I think what would be appropriate, I'm not telling you what to do, is just say I talked to a car guy that's been around for 40 years and is an ASE master, and he said going back to blend is no problem. He said make sure you don't add any oil till it gets below the AdMark. Even if it's at the AdMark, it's still... it's a quart low, but you run a risk of overfilling it, especially if it's a Honda, because it holds 3.5 or 4.25 quarts. So I would wait till it got a tad below add, and then I'd add some oil to it. So I think that's the appropriate thing to do. Anyway, thank you very much for bringing that up, because it gives us an opportunity to talk about when the car is a quart low and the add mark is that number. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. This is KKNT 960. We'll be back. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next hour and 40 minutes, we're talking about car repair. We can talk about wives' tales. We can talk about... my dad used to do this. We can talk about my husband does that. We can do anything you want when it comes to cars and trucks and diesels and gas and motorhomes. If you want to talk motorhomes, that's something. But I wanted to finish up with the conversation about oil. It's important to know, and I'll just give you an example. There is no factory that Harley-Davidson owns that makes their oil. There's no such thing. They buy their oil from somebody who already makes oil, like Valvoline or Castrol or Chevron or whatever. Quaker State, Pennzoil, Phillips 66, Motorcraft. And even Motorcraft has somebody else make their oil. The guys at Harley-Davidson are told that they have to use Harley-Davidson oil, and that's really illegal. If you say that you have to use my oil, in your car, you have to provide it for free. And if you don't believe me, go look up the Magnuson-Moss Act. And that's an act that started with a couple of things. There was Toyota 100 years ago said that you had to use our oil filter. And then when you bought a vacuum, you had to buy the bags from the manufacturer. So they said, no, we're not going to do that. So the Magnuson-Moss Act says that if you demand that they use your oil, you have to provide it for free. Now, what Harley-Davidson did was, in my opinion, was took all the letters and numbers off the quart of oil so you didn't know what you were getting. You didn't know what they wanted you to put in, and you were scared to death that they would catch you using some other oil. Well, here's number one is very few laboratories in the United States can tell you that this is Valvoline or Quaker State or Chevron or Delo or Shell. They can't do that. And if you can find one, knock yourself out. And that kind of testing where they have to test all the oils would probably cost you a whole lot of money. And they're not going to do that. Nobody's going to do that. I'll tell you unequivocally that their engine oil, last time I checked, was a 2050. And it was sometimes it's conventional, sometimes it's a semi-synthetic. So it's a 2050. Now, your primary chain case oil, and I'll tell you the truth, is a cheap 30 weight. That's all it is, a cheap 30 weight. Nothing's going on. You got a bicycle chain inside this big case on the side of your Harley, and that 30 weight will handle that bicycle chain. There's no combustion. There's no water. There's no gasoline. There's no fumes in that case. So just put a cheap 30 weight. But the transmission fluid. The transmission fluid is a high-end gear oil, and it's a synthetic. So it's either a 75-90 or it's a 75-140. But you can use either one of those at buying it from O'Reilly's or an auto parts store. But a 75-90 or 75-140 isn't appropriate. You can use a 75-140 because you don't really have anything but an air cooling system. And in the case that you've got some other motorcycle that has a water-based system, then that stabilizes the engine temperature. So you could probably use a 75-90 in your gear oil. But if you're going to be running a wide variety of temperatures, you probably should use the 75-140. So that's one of those myths. And it really started in my world when Toyota was telling everybody they had to use Toyota oil filters. And the funny part about it was that Toyota was subcontracting those. There are places out there in Phoenix today that say that they pour Motorcraft oil, but really it's Chevron, or it could be Valvoline. And some people say that they have Valvoline, but they pour Motorcraft. So it's a real pain to take all your signs down, and sometimes you're going to take a load. We have 5 or 6 250-gallon tanks. So we have 6 products we go. And so sometimes we'll buy this or we'll buy that, but we have to change all of our signs when we do that. So we just took all the signs down, and if someone asks us, everybody knows that we're pouring Motorcraft or we're pouring Kendall or we're pouring Chevron, because sometimes there's a wide variation. Now, I can't mix them in the tanks, so usually I'll keep some of them, really down low, and we'll pump them out if we're going to change. So that's kind of an oil kind of thing for you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let's talk about gasoline for a minute. I did a segment on television the other day about super and regular, and I'll tell you exactly what I said. And you can argue with me all you want, but we measure the burn time in the cylinder. So when we have the explosion, that's called the flame front. Now, we can measure that. I want you to take a second and divide it into 1,000 different intervals. Take 1 second, and we're going to divide it into 1,000 intervals. Now,
unleaded has an explosion that lasts 6/1000ths of a second. 6/1000ths of a second. Depending on who you ask, and there's a small variation, super unleaded is between 8 and 9 milliseconds. So that's 8 to 9 1000ths of a second. Now, with in the older cars, the timing didn't have a lot of variation. So if you had pre-ignition, which is what cheap gas gives you, and I'm not calling unleaded cheap, I'm just using the difference between cheap and expensive gas, that particular process may very well cause pre-ignition. But I'm going to tell you this. Pre-ignition eats up the piston, destroys the piston, and I haven't seen an engine with a destroyed piston that I couldn't blame on something else. We had an engine that came in the other day that had a destroyed piston, but the engine had aspirated a piece of metal that the guy dropped down inside the engine and didn't know it while he was doing work on the top of the engine. We've had valve springs break and have the piston blow up because the valve was sticking out in the cylinder. In 39 years, I've never seen damage related to pre-ignition. Now, computerized cars are this. We got this knock sensor over there, and as soon as the knock sensor hears pre-ignition, or a knock, so to speak, it says to the computer, I hear noise, and this knock sensor's chattering. And the computer goes, and it turns the knob down. Do you still hear the noise? No, it's gone. Okay. And the computer stops. So it's knocked off a half a degree or 1 degree on your timing. This happens 1,000 times a second. So from the computerized cars, which is 1996 and newer, those cars can handle a ping. So I challenge you, I don't care what your gas door says when you open it up, yeah, it's premium. That doesn't mean nothing. We had a guy chime in that works on only Mercedeses, and he says he tells all of his customers the same thing I'm telling you. Use the cheapest gas you can find. You're never going to know the difference. So when we come back, we're going to talk more about gas. We're going to talk about sunroofs, but if we want to talk about your problems, we can. 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem, and every Saturday between 10 and noon, we're here talking all about cars. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here on the Car Show, Under the Hood with Mark Salem, every Saturday, 10 to 12, right here on KKNT. S&S Tire covers the West Valley, and I like S&S Tire because they have a huge selection of different brands, different models of the same size. So if you stop by S&S and you say, I'm interested in a set of tires, they're going to look at your tire size, and if you say to them, I'd like three prices, good, better, best, and I want to write my check right now, and I don't want it to change between now and the time I pick up my car, you're asking them for a firm price, and they're very capable of that. S&S serves Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. So West Side people, if you really want to get a good deal on tires, S&S Tires. But here's the benefit. They offer everything from wheelbarrows to tractor tires and everything in between, but they have the opportunity to not only see your old tires, they can see unusual wear patterns or ones that are completely normal. Then they can go in, if you accept their offer, they can go in and determine what's causing the unusual wear pattern, but by the same token, if the pattern is good, then they're not going to have to go there. So they can be the ones to look at the tire, estimate, diagnose it, estimate it, and repair it. Many other tire stores, you don't know that. So when you bring your car to guys like me, we would love to see those tires to see what problems you had. Otherwise, we have to start all over again. So that's kind of good about S&S is because they can sell you tires. They can look at the wear with you, and then they can diagnose the wear, estimate the error, and you can decide what you want to do. So that's S&S Tire. Real quick, let me finish up on gasoline, and then we're going to get to Jerry. I know that you're real nervous about when you open up the door on your Tahoe or on your BMW, your Audi, your Mercedes, your fancy Cadillacs, your, you know, top-end Fords. You're worried about, it says, you know, you must use super. I'm just telling you, there's this difference. 16/1000ths of a second explosion versus 18/1000ths of a second explosion. And I can assure you that's not, nothing's going to happen. Here's what my wife and I used to do when we had this argument, because she wanted to burn super in her Jaguar. Now, she had a Jaguar, I think it was a 2000 model, and it had a little 4-liter on it, V8, and it had a factory supercharger on it. So, and I was driving a Suburban 454 with this giant motor in it. So she would fill up my Suburban, and I would fill up her Jaguar, and we would guess
what person, what you put in each other's car. So she would guess and I would guess, and then we would admit what we actually put in. I mean to tell you, I virtually put regular in her Jaguar every single time I filled it up. And her best shot was only 50-50. So she didn't know. I was probably a little better than hers because intermittently on wide open throttle, heavy acceleration with maybe a horse trailer behind the Suburban, I'd get a little bit of rattle if she had regular, if she had put regular in it. But if I gave her my Suburban with a half a tank, and she put regular in it, or if she put super in it to try to fool me, I knew that intermittent would go away. So I'm just telling you, and right now with 40 cents difference per gallon between regular and super on a 20-gallon tank, that's $8. If $8 doesn't mean anything to you, keep giving your car super. But here's the deal. Just because you give your car high octane or super doesn't mean it's going to love you anymore. It doesn't mean the water pump's going to last longer, the brakes, the tires, the transmission, the engine, the rings, the intake manifold, the injectors, all your electronics, your cam sensor, your crank sensor, none of that knows what kind of gasoline you put in the tank. So if you want to argue, 602-508-0960. Jerry, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I don't want to argue.
Okay.
I was just going to ask that question because I just turned the radio on when you were talking about it earlier. Now you just talked about it again. I've got a 2004 Chrysler Crossfire, which is Mercedes. And I wondered the same thing, as all I've been burning on mine is the mid-grade, and I've never noticed any difference in performance or anything. So I'm kind of curious. You're saying that basically I should be able to go with the low-grade regular, I should be okay?
I guarantee it. Here's the deal. What happens is with unleaded gasoline, in an exaggeration, please understand this is an exaggeration because I don't have visuals. You can't see me, so I have to talk with my mouth. In a milliseconds of time, you have 16 milliseconds of flame, of explosion, and super gives you 18 milliseconds of explosion.
1 minute.
We're talking 2/1000ths of a second. So, in an exaggeration, super, one molecule ignites 50 and 50 ignite 100, okay? On super, or on regular gasoline, one ignites 10, 10 ignites 20, and 20 ignites 30. So, it's so silly, but you, Jerry, you would understand that nobody's going to buy a $100,000 Mercedes and expect to put regular in it. It's kind of a badge of honor. When you own an expensive car, you want to give it the very best. And, of course, you have to give it the very best because you just bought a car that's $100,000 or $200,000. Now, there's a guy up in North Scottsdale that works on just Mercedes-Benz. And somebody took me to task the other day on, I don't know, Facebook or on one of the TV stations thing. And he chimed in and he says, Mark's right. I've been telling all my customers for 20 or 30 years that they don't need to run super. He agreed with me. He's got more tenure than I do. He says, in 40-plus years, I've never seen an engine fail. I've never seen a piston blow up because of the gas the person used in their car. So I hang my hat on that. And I'm not telling you this for any other reason than I think you can save money. I'm not owned by a gas company. I'm telling you what I do. I mean, what I do. I have a twin-turbo Corvette that'll do a 10-second quarter mile. I have a blown Camaro that's got a supercharger on it. And when I'm driving those cars, I put regular in them. Now, I don't know what my wife, my son does, because I don't care. But when I drive them, I put regular in them. Okay?
Okay, so it's not going to hurt anything like the cat or anything else like that.
Absolutely not. Your catalytic converter just wants to consume hydrocarbons. So if your engine throws out hydrocarbons, there's this charcoal fire inside your cat. We burn up the hydrocarbons and send out carbon dioxide and water. So the catalytic converters will work the same. The oxygen sensors will work the same. The engine vacuum will be the same. The EGR will be the same. The only difference might be, and this happens so fast, if the NOx sensor hears a ping, it tells the computer, and the computer immediately drops the timing a degree or two. Now, that can happen in the blink of an eye. So if there was some pre-ignition, your computer's not going to let your motor self-destruct. And that's right, the whole purpose of it. So, you know, anyway, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you for bringing that up. And your Crossfire is a you already know it. It's a pretty fast car all by itself. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, let me just get this out of the way. Strictly Diesel and Service and Repair is a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop. They are dedicated to the best possible service, but they work on diesels. They're die-hard diesel service repair and parts guys. They work on both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks, so that you can't take your school bus in there, and you're not going to take your giant motorhome in there. The fact of the matter is light-duty foreign and domestic diesel trucks. They're located at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak. They've been around a long time. They're open Monday through Friday, and they have a really nifty website that has lots of parts for your diesel. So if you're interested in a cold air kit, may I suggest that you stop by Strictly Diesel on their service and repair website.
Hi, Mark. I'm calling. I need to get your opinion and your experience on something. I've been out of the new car market for a number of years, and I'm just getting back in. And I've been a Honda owner for 20 or 25 years, great cars. But I haven't been in there for a while, and I went into the dealership, and lo and behold, all the models that I like have CVTs now. Honda has gone very heavily to the CVTs and the Accords and the Civics and the Fits and the CRVs. And it's made me sort of angry because I'm not a CVT fan and I don't think they're very good. And I'm wondering what you feel about them and if they, is it strictly a cost thing for the makers to put this what I think is a crappy transmission in?
Okay. A CVT, for those of you that don't know it, is a constant velocity transmission, and basically it's like a centrifugal clutch. It only has one forward gear, so there's no more of this in, 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 like that. You just, it just goes in. Now, I agree with you that the CVT in every way, shape, or form has been a huge piece of donkey dung. However, they're getting a whole lot better. The thing that really bothers me about the CVTs is about the only place, up until just recently, about the only place you could buy one is from the dealer. And they were pretty proud of them, and they didn't discount them much because they'd much rather bid Mark out of the project. So now we have people that are rebuilding them and are doing a good job because the parts are no longer proprietary, so they're available on the open market. I also want to tell you that the longevity of a CVT appears to be only slightly less than a 4 or 5 speed automatic. So when I say slightly less, in this respect, if most transmissions are going to be failing somewhere north of 150, somewhere around 150 and a little bit north. And so if a CVT fails at 10,000 miles before a regular transmission, that's not really a harm or foul for me. So if you really like the Hondas, I can tell you I would not buy a Honda just because it has a CVT. I'll tell you what I would do, though. If you ever have a trouble that's related to the transmission, you take it in on a regular basis to document your concerns. Because when you get out of warranty and the transmission fails, then you can go back and say, we never fixed this problem. I still had this problem when I was out of warranty, and now the transmission's failed. You made numerous attempts on fixing the transmission, and you were never successful. So my warranty was never over because this problem existed during warranty, and here's the 4 or 5 repair orders that support that. And that's a really good place to be. But I'm not going to chase you away from a Honda because, really, Honda and Toyota are the two big dogs in the import market. So I like both of them.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay. Was it strictly a cost reason why they put these in? Are they cheaper? Is that the deal?
Oh, no. They're not cheaper, but I think it's a fuel economy issue. I think it's a fuel economy issue. I think the transmission's not shifting. I think there's a wear and tear issue that's going to be a little less, or at least they hope so. But I think this is a fuel economy issue, and I think that's what it is. So we're using a clutch to get you into high gear, and we're not shifting you, and we're not using electric solenoids, and I think we're going to be more efficient with the CVT. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You're welcome, Steve. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark. How you doing?
Good.
A question for you. I've got a 2016 Mazda with a navigation I was all set to pull a battery out, and I got to thinking about starting over again. What do I need to do to save the memory, the memory for the ECM, the memory for the navigation? Is there an item I can get for that?
Well, yes, there is.
Plug in, and then
you can get a cigarette lighter adapter, and you can backfeed the electrical system through the cigarette lighter, and because it's there with the key in and the key off and the key out and all that jazz. And you can plug it into there, but you just make sure that when you're changing that battery, you don't touch that positive to ground, and make sure that, you know, you take good care of it, and you always hook the positive first and the negative second. But I want to tell you, does your navigation have a CD player where you load the navigation software via a CV player, a CD player?
It's got the little CD card, or whatever you call it, a little tiny square card, one inch by one inch.
Yeah, an SD card. If you pull that out and you can change your battery, the only thing you're going to lose is your radio presets and your seating, your creature comfort, how your seat is and how your wife's seat is and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So for me, I just as soon hang on to that because it takes me forever to reset my seat where I wanted it. But in your particular case, if you feel better, just get a 12-volt, small 12-volt battery and plug it into the cigarette lighter and you're home free. Okay?
Can I use a battery charger on it, or is it going to be too risky?
No, that's too risky. Because when you disconnect the battery charger is going to see no voltage, and it's going to start amping up really big. And we don't want that to happen. I mean, you can buy a little bitty hand battery for a 12-volt battery for nothing. Now, there's a lot of people that use a 9-volt battery that's plugged into a cigarette lighter attachment, which is a little radio battery. And those have been somewhat successful. But here's the deal. Even if you screw it up, it's no big deal. The computer will relearn all your parameters. You're just going to have to reset your radios and your seat. That's all. So don't worry about it. If you mess up, don't worry about it. Okay? All right.
Okay. All right. My car will still love me? Is that it?
Your car will love you if you just pay attention to the gauges on the dash. That's it. If you just listen to the car and watch the gauges, your car will last a very long, and change your oil every 5,000 miles or so, your car will love you better. Better than the people that don't do that. Anyway, thank you very much, Tom. That was funny. All right. Let's move on to Doug. Doug, what can I do for you?
Hey, I'm so glad I finally found you after all these years. I have an 08 Tahoe, and it's got the active fuel management. And I've been reading on the forums that can have a tendency to start blowing valves on those four cylinders that are being shut off. And I'm thinking maybe I need to tune that out. What is your opinion of that? Is there any downside to doing that?
Yeah. First of all, I want you to know that every once in a while I'll go on the forums just to kind of listen to the chatter. And so let me change your question. I want you to call three or four shops that have been around a very long time and ask them on the active fuel management on the GM side, are they seeing anything at all? And the answer is really no. And then you can say to them, well, where would you send heads if you had valve problems? And they're going to say ABC Machine. So then you call ABC Machine and you say to them, hey, are you seeing active management GM products with valve problems? Really and truly, I read that not too long ago, and my initial thought process then and now is somebody's blowing smoke. I process, you know, gosh darn it, I process 20 cars a day times 250. What's that? 5,000 cars? 500 cars? I don't know. But I process lots of cars. And I'm not seeing that. I'm just not seeing that. I think the worst part of active management, when you come to a stop, it shuts the car off, right?
Well, it's actually, when the car's not under load, like down the highway,
uh-huh.
It'll go from V8 to V4. So it's just shutting four cylinders
okay.
off.
And it's shutting fuel off, too. So all you're doing is that particular cylinder isn't participating in the push of the car. And so I don't understand if we shut
right.
off fuel. We can shut off fuel, but we can still give spark. Who's going to care? There's nothing in the air. So I'm not a fan of the thought process that because we're killing the cylinder. Now, the engine's watching your throttle. It's watching your load. It's watching your speed. It knows the minute you start going up a hill. The computer knows that because the engine vacuum drops and your foot goes a little deeper.
So it all that everybody knows that. So I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't worry about it. There's nothing you can do about it. And yeah, here's what we are seeing. We're seeing some of the active management in the bigger vehicles where people hate it because it's going in and out of fuel management. So not too long ago, we found this stupid little thing that you plug into the data link connector, and it eliminates selective cylinders, cylinder select. Now, the people that we've given that to or we sold to, and with the money-back guarantee, if you don't like it, bring it back, and I'll take it back. But we sold those to, they love it because no longer is that thing hunting. The motor's always hunting.
Right.
And so they don't like that. And it makes a noise. If you put aftermarket exhaust on it, then the noise changes, and it's got a drone that nobody likes. So anyway, you can do whatever you want, but if you want to disable active management, just get on the Internet, and you'll find something. It's also against the law for any shop to do that. All righty.
Okay.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you very much. Joe, you're up next. How can I help you? Hi, Joe. Are you there?
I am, sorry. I have some replacement mirrors that I bought for a 2003 F-250.
Okay.
And I wanted to go from the SUV-style mirrors, you know, like on an excursion that we're on it, to the more square ones. And the plug was identical. When I put them in, though, the heated mirrors got real hot, and it just didn't feel right. So So I removed them. Is there a problem with that? I mean, is it just wired differently or?
2 minutes.
Oh, so you took off the stock mirrors without the heat and you put the heated ones on. Is that it?
Well, the stock mirrors had the heat symbol on there as well.
Okay.
So I just got the power and the heat in the square version.
Okay. You know, I can't answer that for you. I think the thing to do is to go to the parts department and find out if there's an interchange. Did your vehicle come with a different mirror? Could you have ordered a different mirror? And then at that point, what you're going to do is go to a wiring diagram and make sure that your power and your ground go to the same place. Usually the power is going to come from this fuse panel, so we're going to have power all the time, and we're going to switch the ground. So that's the new thing that we've been doing for 10 years or even longer. But I'm only guessing. You could have a switch that's switching the power side, the power leg, and the ground is there all the time.
Minute.
The other thing I want you to check is I want to make sure that your voltage on your battery is okay. So when you start it up and you hold the idle up, I want to see somewhere between 13 and 14 volts. And so 13 might even be your top, but I want you to be at least at 13, and the higher and not to exceed 14 is where I want you to be. If you've got at idle, if you're pumping out 13.8 and I want you to hold the idle up, that might be a tad high. And if you bring the idle up, then you're at the 14, 14 and a half or 15 mark. You got an electrical problem. You got a bad ground. You got a bad regulator. You got something going on there that shouldn't be there. So that could cause the mirrors to overheat, and it could be something completely unrelated to the fact that you changed your mirrors. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you want to call, you can. The lines are wide open. We got another hour to go, so you're more than welcome to ask car questions. My name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday I'm here from 10 to noon. I'll be back in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Let me take care of some real business here, and then we're going to go to Marty. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Tom, who owns Action Auto Repair. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley. Full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that's been up in the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983, and I've known Tom since 1979. So I know a lot about him. I know he's honest. He's dependable. I know he has a conscience, and I know he doesn't take advantage of his customers. So if you live up in the Deer Valley, North Phoenix area, then Action Auto Repair, which is on the northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17, then if you don't have a shop, then you should try Tom at Action Auto. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. They know how to get the job done right, and they understand what they're doing, and they know how to diagnose things, they know how to bid things, they know how to fix things, and then they know how to go drive it to make sure that what they fixed is now gone. I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto Repair. Marty, The floor is yours.
Yes, Mark, I got two questions on my 2008 Subaru Forester Turbo. The first car I had was a 2005, which is about the identical car that at 288,000 miles I lost compression in one cylinder with a burnt valve, and the dealer said I should have checked the valve lash at 100,000 miles, even though that's not in the owner's manual. So now the car I have now has got 190,000. I've never had that done. Is that something that I should check before I want to prevent what happened to the other one?
Well, I have a real problem with this kind of conversation. Not with you. Please don't misunderstand. But I think that before we start diagnosing things based on our ability to look up the tailpipe and tell you what's the matter with it, let's ask two questions. You say, Mark, what's the symptom of valves that are too tight? And the answer is a backfire. A backfire through the tailpipe if it's an exhaust valve, and a backfire through the intake valve if it's an intake valve. So if the valves are too tight, then it's either not going to start well when it's cold, because the valves are open and we can't build compression and we can't get anything, but it'll go away when the valves are hot. I just had a quad that did that. Ate my lunch trying to figure it out too, by the way. So if you don't have any backfires, you never had anything coming out of the tailpipe or anything on the front side where it's backfiring or it's clattering, and you don't have anything other than a quick clatter in the morning, that means the lifters are pumping up, and then you don't have any other click, 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 click throughout the day, then I disagree. I disagree. You don't have any symptoms, and I get that a lot where people bring their cars to me and many other shops, and they say, I was told I needed a valve adjustment. Okay, got any backfiring? Because that means they're too tight. No, I don't. Do you got any clattering? No, I don't. Bring your car over here and let me listen to it. Get a couple of guys. Hey, do you guys hear anything that bothers you? No. So, I mean, you had 200, how many thousand miles did you have on the first one?
288. That's why I got another one.
Okay. Oh, no, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Let's do 300 divided by 12. You've been around the world 12 times in that car. Do you really think that everything was going to last forever? Right?
Yeah, that's why I got rid of it, because everything else was original. It was like nothing had ever been done to it. If the transmission was original, hadn't even done a CV boot or struts or anything else. So.
Yeah. It's just, you kind of, you mimic my father. My father was, just drive them till they died. And he would always say, I saved a whole lot of money not doing some of the stuff. There's a risk associated with that, but there's also a reward at the tail end. So I'm not quite sure with newer model cars you want to skip some of the fluid maintenance. But I tell you, you
no,
will.
I changed the oil and did the timing belts and stuff.
Okay.
But the second question on this car, I noticed I had a little puddle of grease under the car yesterday. I thought maybe CV boot was ripped, but it's actually coming from the rear bushing on the lower control arm that I checked online, and they do have fluid in them. How urgent is that to get changed?
Well, I'd probably do it before you ran out of fluid, and I'd probably do it before you had a clunk when you take off or a clunk when you brake. So otherwise, when you start clunking the back end, it's time to get it fixed. And it's going to wear a tire, too. So you want to avoid that. And the lower control arm, they don't come apart very often, but I've seen one or two that have come apart. The wheel falls on the ground, and now you're really embarrassed. And inevitably, one of two things. You're on your way to your daughter's wedding, and you just broke the car down, or you got to go to the bathroom. So it's a bad idea to wait till it happens. All righty?
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Marty. Jerry, you're up next. Jerry, how can I help you?
Hey, Mark, I've got a follow-up from last week and a question for you.
Okay.
Last week I was working on a 2002 Dodge Intrepid with a cock spring.
Uh-huh.
And I called and I told you everything seemed to be upside down. Well, it was upside down because according to the instructions, which I did not read, hope that doesn't adjust my man card at all, before you take the cock spring off, you have to turn the wheel 180 degrees clockwise, which then puts the drive pin on the top. So that's what I did not do. So that was that. And the question I have is on vehicles with four-wheel brakes that are disc, why do they put the caliper in a different position on the back than on the front?
Why do they? Oh, the calipers. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
As you look at the rear brakes on the driver's side, the rear caliper is at 10 o'clock. And if you look at the calipers on the front side, then the caliper's at 2 o'clock. Does that represent the situation you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
I always wondered why that is.
And you know what? I don't know. No one's ever asked me that question in my life, so I don't know. I think it's a matter of the efficiency. I think if we're in the – now, I'm guessing now. Just take this as a guess. When we're on the back side of the rotor, as we apply the brakes, that may tilt the car in one way or another. And then if we move the caliper about 90 degrees away, then that may cause the car to squat. I don't know the answer to that. I'm just kind of guessing off the cuff, but I don't know. I don't know. And frankly, I've known that to be the way it's been for a long time, but not every car is like that, I can tell you that.
Oh, okay. So, it just seems like to me everything was. So.
Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to take your man card away for just 1 second.
Okay?
Because I know for sure your wife was helping you. And she was reading the directions, and she skipped number 9.
Well, actually, she lost the directions.
Oh, that explains it. No, and I appreciate, it's not very often that someone raises their hand and says two things. I was wrong. I'm sorry. That's something I've learned over 44 years of marriage. That kind of just diffuses everything. I'm sorry, I was wrong. But I admire you for that, because frankly, you stumped me last time you called why the clock spring was 180 degrees off. I had never had the question before, and I never thought to ask my guys, but I'm pretty sure one of them learned the same thing that you just learned. So, anyway. All right. Thank you very much
thank
for
you
calling.
Very much.
You betcha. So when we talk about good car repair shops, you see, I have a list of best car repair shops. And here's my promise to you. If you go to one of my best car repair shops, and you've checked on the internet, and they're still there, then if you have a problem with them, they're obligated to go through a Better Business Bureau process. They've promised me they would. At the end of that time, if the Better Business Bureau tells the shop to either pay you money or fix your car, and the shop doesn't, I will up to $5,000. Now, not too long ago, we had a serious complaint, and we put the shop on probation until the complaint was handled. At the end of the day, the Better Business Bureau said, you need to refund the customer $2,000. So the shop delivered a cashier's check to us, and then we gave it to the customer to make sure the transaction was done. At the same time, I was prepared to write that check for $2,000 in case the shop didn't want to. That's the first time that's happened since 1988. 1980. I started my best car repair shops list in 1988. I'll tell you the story why. It's real simple. My mother was an executive, a high-end executive at a variety of companies. And when I started radio, my mother would call me. My mother did call me once, and she said, "You sound like crap." And I said, "Well, thanks, Mom, because I'm just new at this radio gig, and I'm doing the best I can." And she says, "It has nothing to do with that. You're just sitting there thumping your chest, telling everybody how good you are." She says, "Don't you have any friends in the industry you can refer these people to? Why do you expect them to drive all the way around the valley to your shop?" So she convinced me, and at that time I knew that I needed to do something if somebody said, "Can you recommend a good shop?" Because before I was saying, "Yeah, I'll do your work." So I went out, and I have all kinds of friends all over the valley, guys that I respect, guys older than me, guys more seasoned than me, guys with better technical skills than me. And so I put together this best car repair shops list. And so if you go to marksalem.com, you can click on best, and you'll get the list. It's not easy to get on my list. If you're an idiot, you're not going to get on my list. If you're mean to a customer, and they write me an email, and they send your email along with their email, you're gone. I don't have time for shenanigans. I don't have time for somebody selling a radiator and misrepresenting the price, and then when challenged on the price, they blame it on somebody else, but they can't prove a receipt to prove that they were charged wrong. I don't put up with that. But I want to tell you something. Maybe once a year, I get involved in a complaint, and frankly, I've never paid a dime because the shop has already taken care of it, or is going to take care of it.
or the Better Business Bureau found that there was no harm, no foul. So my best shops is a list very close to my heart, and I don't take the responsibility lightly. So, you might hear me say the name of my shop once a year. I really go out of my way not to say the name of my shop because I'm here for you. I'm here to help you with your car problems. I'm here to talk about give and take. The women will call and give me all the symptoms. The guys will call and tell me this is what's wrong with their car because they've already diagnosed it. And it's just a fun way, and it's just the way that guys are. It's the way my technicians are, and it's the way I am to some extent. I found myself the other day calling a plumber and telling him I need a new garbage disposal, and he got there and he says, why don't we just push this button underneath here? And he said, did you get anything in there? And I said, yeah, I probably overloaded it, and he just quit working. And he goes, well, here's a reset button. And he charged me $25 for the service call. But I told him what I think I needed, and I was wrong. So my wife's sitting here next to me. So, honey, I was wrong about the dishwasher or about the garbage disposal. And then that pales into comparison to the meal you served to us the other night that you burned. But nevertheless, I didn't hear. Sorry for that one. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open, we'll be back. Well, it's 11:20 on a Saturday afternoon. My name's Mark Salem. The name of this show is Under the Hood with Mark Salem, and I want to tell you about a good shop on the west side called Automotive Dynamics. It's Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. I've known Chuck for a very long time, early 70s. He's been operating this shop since 1982, and now his son is a big part of the management team, if not all the management team. At Automotive Dynamics, they have great staff. Their mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill, so therefore they will not sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're in the Sun City area, Auto Dynamics, they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. I want to just add one more thing to the story I told you before the break about my mother. One of the things my mother told me during that conversation where she was chewing on my butt, she said, develop credibility first and there'll be a path to your door. And that's something I've done since 1988, just develop credibility. And obviously a byproduct of that is that we have an increased customer count. But I'm still here for you, and it has nothing to do with trying to get you to come to my shop. I just want to make that clear. Let's go to Jim. Jim, good morning. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mark. I have a gasoline question for you. I heard you talking about gasoline earlier.
Sure.
I have an old pickup that's been sitting like 10 years. And when I take the gas cap off, the fuel smells really, really bad. And I drained some out, and it's orange or gold and turning to varnish. However, I drained a little out, and it's still flammable. I want to get it out of there. I want to put fresh gas in the vehicle and rebuild the carburetor and drive it a little bit.
Okay.
What can I do with that old fuel? Can I put that in my 2017 car and drive it because it's still flammable? Or where do I dispose of that fuel?
Okay, this is a great question because we deal with this every day. I want you to put it in some kind of a container, like a 5-gallon container. Get 2 5-gallon plastic trash or gas cans. Go ahead and put it in that. Now, I don't care how many cars you drive or your lawnmower or anything else, but I would probably stop clicking at the 3/4 mark on your car, and then I would stick that in your tank, and it would go glug, 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 glug. That's probably about a quart, maybe a half a gallon. And so you're going to mix it with a lot of fresh gas, and everything's going to be fine. But the fact that it catches fire is not indicative of the fact it's still 10-year-old gas that's really, really bad at 100%. So when it's 100% old gas, it's bad. But is it going to hurt your newer model cars? No, because your new model cars have some really good filtering system on it. So if you get in any solids, they'll stop at the filter. We're going to dilute the heck out of it, and we're going to send it out the tailpipe. Or if you want, you can take it over to some environmental facility, and they'll take it off your hands for $100 a gallon.
Okay.
Right. All right. Well, that's a great question. I hope my answer helps you out, buddy.
All right. Well, thank you very much, sir.
You betcha.
Have a good weekend.
And same to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, I want to read you a letter I got. This speaks volumes. He says, I'm not going to tell you who he is, but he says, I have a factory-installed sunroof that broke the other day, and the dealership estimated at $2,300 to replace the entire assembly. Remember the $2,300. I had a friend of mine that had his Ford truck. He repaired his Ford truck sunroof using aftermarket parts from Dr. Sunroof. Now, the parts are just over $100. Can you recommend that I use these parts? And if so, can you send me to a shop in North Scottsdale to perform the work? So we had a conversation, and I said, I don't know anything about Dr. Sunroof. Do, you know, Dr. Sunroof reviews and see what other people are saying about him. See if he's a good, clean guy. And then ask him if he has a vendor in Phoenix that distributes his parts. So he writes me back, and he said, the parts are from the manufacturer of my sunroof. I took my truck today to the sunroof doctor on McDowell, which was recommended from the company that builds them for Ford. I took my truck to them at 6:30, and it was ready at 11 o'clock. The roof operates great. There's no water or air leaks because I just went through the car wash. He paid $550 for a six-month warranty. That versus $2,300 for an entire new assembly. Now, I know we're bidding apples and oranges here because the dealer said he wanted to put a whole new unit in, but this guy figured out that the parts are available during this Dr. Sunroof guy. He calls that guy and he says, do you have a vendor that you sell those parts to? And he goes, well, you do. The Sunroof Doctor, 2530 East McDowell, Phoenix. So he took his Ford to the Sunroof Doctor. Now, this guy builds helicopter parts for a living. He understands how important it is to make parts right, because obviously there's a lot of people in the palm of his hands. Their lives are in the palm of his hands. So I was really excited. But I think that's an important consideration. I think you can save money if you'll spend a little time. And so I ask him, how long did it take you to track this backwards? And he says, maybe 2 hours. And so I said, I'm not really good at math off the top of my head, but let's take $2,300 and then let's subtract $600. And that comes up to $1,700. So if you spent 2 hours, then basically you paid yourself $850 an hour. And I used a calculator to do all that. I'm not that good in my head. So if you like getting paid $850 an hour for 2 hours worth of work, I suggest this is what you think about doing. I also suggest that in my world of car repair, we oftentimes sublet work. So I'm quite sure that people are sending the Sunroof Doctor on McDowell. I'm sure they're sending him business, but they're getting back a $560 bill, $550 bill is what he wrote, but they're marking it up. And here's why they do that, because we know we're in the food chain on a warranty issue. So if we charge you exactly what they charge us, $550, and he goes out of business a month later and there's a warranty issue and that job went through my invoice, I'm in the food chain. I should be in the food chain. So guys will mark that $550 up to $600 or $650 because they know they're in the food chain. So, and they handled it for you, and they didn't have any money in, but they still had time. So it's not bad that we do that, but it is bad if somebody took a $550 repair bill and marked it up to $2,300. That might be outside of normal range. Alrighty. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa has been around since 1970. I've known the people that ran it back in the 70s, the Thompson family. They've been providing expert auto and light truck and maintenance services to Mesa area for many, many years. ASE certified techs, highest level of automotive service, all the stuff that's important to you. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is on Main Street just east of Stapley, and he's the only shop on my list that's in Mesa. Now, some have applied and didn't have the criteria necessary. Some have more business than they know what to do with, so they've respectfully said, we don't want to be a part of your group, not that I'm soliciting them. But Thompson's the only place in Mesa. I'm pretty proud of them. That shows a real difference in their philosophy. Brian and Thelma own and operate Thompson's Auto Repair. So if you stop by Thompson's Auto Repair, if you meet Brian or his wife Thelma, you'll know exactly why I like them so doggone much, because they're the salt of the earth and they're exactly the kind of people that you would hope someday would either marry your daughter or your son or be your neighbors, because they're that kind and they're that nice. So that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street just east of Stapley, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You want to talk, 602-508-0960. All righty, it's 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. So Gil and I are talking off air, because this is a live show. So we're talking off air, and somebody just said something about the wedding in England, and he goes, did you get to watch that? And, of course, I know he's teasing me, and I said, yeah, I had to watch it for about an hour, because that was before I could get the remote and go to the boxing match or the mixed martial art match I wanted to watch. And he goes, yeah, he said, I had to watch Out of Africa the other day. And I said, well, do you want me to talk about it on the air? I can chastise your wife for making you watch Out of Africa. And he used bad words. Is I can just tell you that he used bad words, but I understood.
I feel
real
bad about it.
You do. Nevertheless, okay. Kurt's Automotive is at I-17 in Bell. He's a good guy. I've sent Kurt some of those cars that nobody can fix my car, or this shop said this and this shop said that. Kurt's is at I-17 in Bell. He's centrally located for those of you in that part of the valley. He's a good guy. Lady says she's told by two shops she needs a $3,000 motor. Kurtz fixed it for less than $200. It was a bad oil pressure switch. So they diagnosed a bad motor by looking at the oil pressure switch, and the oil pressure switch was at zero. So, oh, you need an engine. Kurtz says, oh, well, let's see if it has oil pressure. He takes the switch out. He puts a gauge in. The gauge is fine. He knows the switch is bad. He puts a new switch in there, an oil pressure switch that talks to the gauge in the dashboard. The oil pressure comes up. He bills her for the test, he bills her for the R&R of the switch and putting on the gauge, and then he bills her everything, and it's less than $200, and she thinks he walks on water. She's still a customer today. So if you're in that area of I-17 and Bell, may I suggest Kurtz Automotive. He's a good guy, northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. Larry, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. I have an 012 Volkswagen Passat diesel. And I got an air conditioning issue with, like, for instance, I have it on now, and it's like 90 degrees, and it's blowing perfect. But when I get into the 95s and higher temperatures, it starts to lose its efficiency, sometimes completely warm. Okay. But then it goes back. All right. Just want to get a grip on it when I start taking it somewhere.
Okay. I think what you need to do is a little bit more testing. I need to know, here, if you walk into the shop and you say to the shop, you know, it blows like a great, it throws ice cubes at me below 95 degrees, but after 95 degrees, the ice cubes are gone. It's just kind of a luke cold water. It's just kind of cold. And then you say, and it seems to have to do with whether I'm in city driving or highway driving, because it changes for the better when I'm on the city or when I'm on the highway, and it's an obvious difference when I'm driving around the city. Well, I know I got a fan problem. I know I have an air across the condenser problem. You either got bugs or you sucked up a Taco Bell wrapper or something like that's causing an airflow problem across the condenser. So when you go faster, we have good airflow. Maybe the fan's out of it. On the other hand, are you on maximum or are you on normal?
Well, I usually roll it on low all the time.
Okay.
I mean, I like it cold, but I've been keeping it at 65 nowadays.
Okay.
And it does seem to have a little more temperature range.
Okay.
If I leave it on 65, but it still cuts out when it gets up there in temperature.
All right. This is your fault.
But not totally. And sometimes the airflow when I get on the highway will. It'll cool down a little more.
Okay. Well, if I fix it right now, will you just like put an extra couple dollars in the plate the next time you see it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Just get off low.
Keep it off low. Okay.
Yeah. Here's what's going on. You're driving around in low. Your windows are up, and you're freezing. Behind the glove box is the evaporator, and it's just icing up. It's like blowing across an ice cube like this. Gotcha. Now, if I'm blown across the ice cube, I'm not going to melt it. But now, here's the deal. I want you to just keep doing it the way you are. I want you to kick it up one or two speeds, but I want you to use the windows to control the temperature. If you get too cold, drop a window. Your air conditioning unit wants to run at full speed. It's going to give you the best service and the best life at full speed. So
gotcha.
I promise you that's the issue. When you said low, boom, I got it. But that's,
okay, then I will call you back and let you know how I did next Saturday.
That's okay. That's okay. And if I'm wrong, I'll raise my hand and say it.
But you're the greatest show I've ever had. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, you're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. Oh, gosh. We've had so much fun with it. And hey, you guys.
1 minute.
You guys, okay? See how that went, give and take? He didn't diagnose it himself. He says, this is what's going on, and this is what's happening, and I'm asking him questions, and he's answering the question. And, hey, guys, there's three answers to every question. Yes, no, or I don't know. Every time a woman comes in, she tells us just the symptoms. They never tell us how to fix their car. But if we have a lobby full of pretty women, the next hairy-chested guy that walks in is going to announce all he knows about cars, and he's going to tell us how to fix it. And 75% of the time, he's not even in the right country. So he says it's in Lebanon, and it happens to be in Africa or Mexico. It's just a different thing. But the give and take is important. On the other hand, if you walk in and you say something to somebody and they don't write it down, and you're giving them symptoms and they're not writing them down or they're not logging them in, then you probably should find a different shop, because that's what it's all about. It's the diagnostic process is give and take. I just saved him, and I know I'm right because he's on running on low. I just saved him $50 to $75 worth of diagnostic time. If I'm wrong next Saturday when he calls in, I'll triple the donation when the plate passes me the next time. But I'm quite sure, low. That was the key word, low. And I was going to get there because I was asking him whether he's running maximum or recirculatory, and I was asking him if he has all the vents open or if he's got the passenger side closed because his wife's always cold. So we were going to get there. But when he said low, we're done. We'll be back in a minute. Yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. 20 minutes from the top of the hour, and I'll be gone then every Saturday between 10 and 12. We're here talking about cars. You're always welcome to stop by and enjoy the fun. And if I make you mad, you can send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, and I will tell you I'm sorry. But, you know, pushing the boundaries is something I've done most of my life. And so every once in a while I get called into the GM's office, and I have my own chair in his office, and he starts the conversation with, did you really say this? And the answer is yes, I did. You've already listened to the tape. Lying at this point would be crazy.
Chair's got your name on it, Mark.
And Gil says the chair's got my name on it. But he's a nice guy. I apologize. I'm learning his parameters. Not too long ago, I said this. I said, if you're going to complain about the show, what you need to do, if you're going to come, I think we're coming back here. I think we're coming back. Gil, are we there?
We got you, Mark.
Okay. All right. I got some sound in my headphones here. If you're going to complain about the show, I'm going to help you out. First of all, you're going to complain to Salem Broadcasting. What is it, Salem? Tell Gil?
Yeah, it's a Salem Radio Network.
That Salem Radio Network. Thank you. So you're going to complain to Salem Radio Network. And just so that you get everything right, you're going to complain about Mark Salem. I thought it was funny. I don't own the radio network. They have radio stations all over the United States. So anyway, that was a phone call, but he was nice about it. And he didn't tell me I couldn't say it. He just said somebody misinterpreted what you said. Well, make no mistake about this. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been building transmissions in the Phoenix area since 1968. Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. Not Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons, but you can call them, you can stop by, and if you can duplicate the problem, they'll have somebody ride with you. But you cannot take their technician for 2 hours while you try to duplicate it. You got to figure out what to do to make it happen. But it doesn't make any difference. Every transmission is thoroughly tested. They do oil changes. They do leaks. They replace con- entire transmission. So everything in the whole spectrum of transmission diagnosis and repair can happen at 40th Street in Washington, and that's called automatic transmission exchange. Bill, good morning. How can I help you?
I got a question. I mean, there must be something different about brake linings. I've got 84,000 on my car. It's got the original brake linings. The dealer keeps telling me they're just fine. I've never had brakes go over maybe 40,000 miles before.
Now, you're talking about brake linings? You're talking about brake pads?
The disc pads.
Okay. Because when you said brake lines, I thought you were talking about the rubber brake lines. At 84,000 miles, obviously, if he's saying that you're fine, I'm going to go with him because he gets to see it and I don't. You're right. Most of the time, we're doing front brakes at, 30, 40, and we're doing rear brakes a little bit after that. So do you do a lot of highway miles? Is it a standard shift that you're downshifting?
No, it's a Cadillac CTS, six-speed automatic. Most of it's in town.
All right. I don't have an explanation for you. And the next time I think what you should do is if you take it in for service, you say, when he checks my brakes, I want to come back and see him. And I would really appreciate it if he would just go get a brand new set of pads so that I can compare what I'm seeing to a brand new set of pads.
Yeah, I got to believe he's not lying to me because he'd sell me the brake linings if I needed them.
You took the words out of my mouth. And I'm not going to beat up dealers. Let's talk about chain stores. Let's talk about dealers. Let's talk about independents. Let's talk about all the different auto repair places. I agree with you. If there is no benefit to him telling you don't need front brakes, it's actually always the opposite where we're going, you need front brakes. Our industry goes, you need front brakes. Then they go somewhere else and they go, you got 50% of the pad left.
Yeah. So a question, where's the best place to get tires? It's going to need tires. And I just don't know. I mean, I used to get them at Fletcher's, but they're out of business now.
Okay. Well, if you want tires, are you on the east side, west side, north side, south side? Where you at?
North Central, around Glendale and 16th Street.
Okay. You can either go to S&S Tire on the west side, or Discount, or Price Club, those kinds of places. Now, you would assume that those guys would be the cheapest guys in town, but that's not the case. There is some tires that are dogs that you'll own forever, and those are going to be really cheap, but the fast-moving common ones are also kind of cheap.
I don't buy Michelin, and
that's okay. There's better tires out there. But
well, I've had Michelin for years, and they've always been terrific.
No,
so I don't want to change.
I don't blame you. You ride the horse who got you there. So yeah, and you can do that from your house. You just go outside and look at the Michelin. It's going to give you the Michelin and the model and the size. Sit down, call them up, and say, "Would you bid four out the door? Here's my phone number. My name's Bill." You don't even have to go anywhere. Just call around. All righty.
Yeah, but I also want a place that if I happen to be out of town and I get a blowout, the warranty is good there. I mean, if it's just a shop here, I wouldn't think the warranty would be good somewhere else.
All right, let me change your question, or let me ask you this. How many times have you had a blowout?
I get one about once every 5 years.
Okay. Is it because you kissed a curb or you ran through a pothole? Is it your fault or is it the tire's fault?
Last one I had, I was coming back from Yuma on a Sunday night. It was 110 degrees out. And it blew out about 30 miles east of Yuma. Not a best place to have a problem.
No.
But I had a donut. I'm able to put the donut on and get home.
Okay. Well, let me tell you that 50% of the blots that we see are not because of the tires defective. They were run underinflated and overheated, and that number doubles and triples once we start hitting 100 degrees. And a curb hits real easy. It's got a cut in the sidewall. I mean, that's when you got a cut in a sidewall that's 3 inches long and it looks like somebody made it with a razor blade, there's no defective tire there. That tire was hit a curb and the rim pinched the tire and wiped it out. You can buy the road hazard warranty. But in reality, what you're talking about is a defective tire. I wasn't there, but I'm going to call it a defective tire. Well, emission can be warranted.
You're breaking up. Something's wrong with your microphone. You're breaking up.
Okay. Am I better there?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, I'm doing everything I know how to do here. I'll turn up my volume a little bit.
It's
is that better?
Gil's the problem.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're okay now?
Okay. The issue is that if the tire's defective because of the way it was made, anybody that sells Michelin will warranty that for you. So you don't need a relationship. But if you're going to buy an aftermarket
road hazard warranty, then you're going to have to stick with the bride that you found at the altar. So if you buy it from discount, you can buy a road hazard, and they'll cover it, and they've got quite a coverage for you. Price Club's the same way, although I don't know if they have a road hazard. So it just depends on how the tires failed. But I want to tell you something. I service a lot of tires, and of all the tires that come in, let's pretend I see 50 tires a year, one a week. Probably 80% of those are damaged by the person that's driving the car because they didn't check the air pressure, they overloaded their truck, they overloaded their trailer, and it's real easy for me to determine that. So as far as the tire being defective because of the way it's made, your odds are pretty thin. But then again, it's your car and your thing. So if that were the case, I'd probably stick with some national company that's got facilities all over. Okay? All right.
I'm real careful about inflation. I even checked the spare. So
I understand.
That's not a problem.
I understand. Right.
Thanks very much.
You bet, Bill. Thank you very much. Okay, I want to talk to you about something that I just did not too long ago. I started looking for a quad, and I wanted a big four-seater. And so the options are the Polaris Razor and the big Can-Am turbocharged. So I kind of went around and I called some places in the valley. Everybody was the same. And then I determined that virtually every Can-Am dealer and every Polaris dealer is owned by the same company. And virtually the out-the-door price, because that's what I wanted. How much do I have to write my check for before I leave? And I was kind of disenchanted by that. That would be like every Chevrolet dealership that's owned by the same company. I don't know. It's the free enterprise. It's not my deal. So on my way up and down.
Bob is your next caller, Bob.
Up and down the mountain, I come up to Payson a lot because I'm bringing my horses up here for the summer and taking them back during the winter. And I passed a place called Four Season Motorsports down in Rice. I thought I got nothing to lose. Never went and walked in there. I walked in there, and he just flat kicked every number I had, which was the same, just hands down. So I bought it from him. He's close to where I'm at. He's close to where I'm going to be riding the quad because we're going to have it up here at the ranch. So the idea is I really like that. So I'm doing a free commercial for Four Seasons Motorsports in Rye. You're probably not going to call him. You should stop by. You should drive it. You should look at it. So if you're going up and down Payson Highway, stop by. But he really did a good job selling me this, and he didn't sell me cheap because of Mark Salem. He sold me cheap because he sells better than everybody else. So if you have a monopoly, there's no real reason to move it around. Since then, I've checked. There's also an independent shop, a one-owned place in Sierra Vista, and there's a one-owned place in Casa Grande that has Can-Ams. So look around before you buy, but the monopolies, you're going to get the same price at every store. So I'm just telling you, with respect to Polaris, Yamaha, Can-Am, and then trailers and aluminum trailers and plate trailers, then Rye might be a good place. And that's not a paid advertisement. I'm just telling you that was what I ended up with. Okay, tell me who's there again.
Bob.
Bob, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Dr. Mark. Quick question. The fellow that had the problem with his air conditioner by putting it on low, okay, my Ford, I have either AC or max AC. Which one should I use?
Okay, let me explain. Are you old enough to remember swamp coolers?
Oh, yeah, I've had them. I've serviced them and worked on them.
Good. Normal is swamp cooler, and maximum is air conditioning. Okay. That's how the difference is. On normal, on a swamp cooler, did it work good if you closed all the windows in your house?
No, you need to open about half of them, matter of fact.
Exactly. That's what normal is. Normal is we're blowing into the car, but we need to get the air out. Now, when you crack the windows on the top,
okay,
the hot air rises, so the cold air is going to come in at the bottom, and it's going to push the hot air out. So that's normal. On recirculation or maximum, we're taking air underneath the glove box, we're cooling it off and sending it right back into the car. So on maximum, we need the windows rolled up. That's the difference. Now, let me tell you what I do, and I think you'll understand this better than most people. I get in my truck, it's really hot. I use some bad words. I turn on the air, and I run fast speed on normal, and I drop my two front windows down about 3 inches. That gets the hot air out of my truck real fast. Then I roll the windows up. I go to maximum recirculation. That's exactly what you should do. That's exactly what you should do.
Okay, thank you very much. That's what I do. I crank them down a bit and then go.
That's
thanks,
it.
Mark.
You betcha. You betcha. And those of you with vehicles that are the size of a school bus, it takes a longer time to bring all the air inside your giant car, your giant van, your giant SUV. It's tough for us to cool it off, especially when the temperature's over 100. But if you just open your windows and go to normal and turn on your fan speed as high as it can, again, hot air rises, and so we have this heat blanket that goes from our chin to the top of our head. That's the hot part of the car. But when we bring cold air in there, we're going to shove the air out those windows, and then after a few minutes, you roll up the windows, you go to maximum, and you're set. You can cool your car off half as fast as normal if you just use that kind of thing. All righty, what else have we got here? We talked about oil. We talked about Four Seasons Motorsports in Rye. We talked about automatic transmission exchange. How about we do this? If you ever want to send me an email, my email address is easy. It's Mark with a K, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Salem is like the cigarette for you older people, or Salem, Oregon, or the Salem Witch Trials. And there's a reason why they named them Salem Witch Trials, and my sisters, if you've ever met them, you'd know why. I'm telling you the truth about two of them.
Never, Mark.
I'm not scared of getting in trouble with them because I don't care. Nevertheless, let me give you some hints on car repair. When you go to a place and they tell you you need something, you say this: you know, let's get my owner's manual out, and can you show me where it says that in my owner's manual? And I'll bet you 9 out of 10 times, I'll bet you 95 out of 100 times, they're going to make an excuse not to do that. Oh, well, that's not written for Arizona. That's BS. It's written for Arizona. They don't have one for Michigan. They don't have an owner's manual for Michigan and California and high humidity in Florida and Arizona. That manual's written for all 50 states. So don't let them tease you like that. So you say to them, show me where it says that in my owner's manual. And if they don't and they can't, then you say, what symptoms are you going to fix with your suggested flush? And then if they tell you symptoms, if you have them, fine. And if you don't, pass. Or you say to them, write it down, sign your name, put your phone number on there. My husband wants to call you. And they won't do that either. No matter what kind of you're in the independent market, the dealership market, the chain stores, nobody's signing their name to something like that. See you next Saturday right here, 10 to noon on KKNT.